Rabbi Arthur Wasko has been a political activist, a peace advocate, and a prolific author for many decades. I've had the privilege of being a colleague of Arthur and working with him on several different projects through the years. His new book is titled Dancing in God's Earthquake: The Coming Transformation of Religion. And I am really pleased that it brings Rabbi Wasko back to State of Belief Radio again. Arthur, welcome.
Well, shalom to you and to all your listeners.
There is an energy in your writing, almost an excitement at the spiritual potential the kinds of upheavals that we've all been living through can unleash. Does that resonate with you?
Yes, absolutely. I think, to tell the truth, that we're living in the kind of awakening time that the Roman Empire brought about. One aspect of what it did was crush the older spiritual and religious communities of the Mediterranean basin, including biblical Judaism, and unleashed new energies as people tried to figure out what to do. And among the new energies were certainly both rabbinic Judaism and Christianity. So what happened was really exciting. It took a couple hundred years to work out what was going to really work out of that earthquake. Several earthquakes brought on by Rome and the Hellenistic empires. And modernity, I think, has done the same thing to every traditional religious and spiritual community on the planet. We're all in a state of earthquaking and God wrestling, and we're looking to see, and not just looking, but acting to see what we can do. So dancing as a metaphor for me came to describe what we're doing as the dance floor itself started shaking and quaking and moving.
Yeah. Are you seeing a growing number of people who are recognizing this thread in our current day?
Yes, I am. There have been several responses, as there was 2,000 years ago. One response 2,000 years ago was people saying, shrugging sort of, and saying, well, this Hellenistic philosophy stuff, it seems very smart, and abandoning the spiritual ventures. And some people today are saying, well, you know, science and secularism seems to work pretty well, even though it gets us in a lot of dangerous spaces, including even the ultimate dangerous space of endangering life on the planet. Can't get more dangerous than that. And at the same time, there are these bubblings of house churches, independent fellowships, explorations, people rediscovering the indigenous communities, people who have been scornful of their own dead-end religious communities going to Standing Rock and discovering there was real energy in the indigenous communities standing against the oil companies' depredations, and realizing that part of the strength of the resistance was precisely in the spiritual roots of the resistance. So I think a lot is going on that is looking in new ways, not the old ways, but in new ways at the old tradition.
Arthur, as a lifelong peace activist, from where do you draw the kind of hopefulness that permeates your writing as well as your work at the Shalom Center?
Well, I lived through 15 years of earthquakes that really made some very important changes in American society. Not enough, but very important ones. And even knowing that there was a 30-year reaction, some of that change, a great deal of that change, has not been rubbed out. In fact, I think some of the changes we were able to make have been crucial in providing the platform for the set of changes that have been bubbling the last 5 or 6 years and have become so important in the last even year.
Mm-hmm.
So some of us who were active in the 60s and 70s
mm-hmm.
have seen the work we've done, even damaged, wounded, recurring with new life and new energy. We've lived long enough to be able to see that and seen that it's made a difference now, and it's making a bigger difference at the grassroots and even national election. So I think that's the sense of hope, that old line going back to an abolitionist minister and repeated by Martin Luther King, that it takes a long time for the arc of the universe to bend for justice, but it does bend.
What will be the most important, significant transformation of religion coming toward us?
Well, I can tell you what I think will be. I think the images of domination and subjugation, which we still, even as we move toward a fuller democracy, keep as images in such deep ways, King, Lord, are beginning to shift as we move toward what I see as a much more ecological way of seeing the world. And I don't mean just ecology and biology, seeing it in the way with which different biological species fit together, but as the way in which cultures and politics fit together, not being dominated. I mean, for instance, who knew that our brain, which we thought was in charge of everything, is deeply affected by millions of microorganisms in our bellies that we didn't even know existed, even just 20 years ago, that they are there and they affect the way our brain works. That's a much more ecological sense of how our humanity is than everything is top-down. Literally, in this case, it's not top-down. I had a wonderful conversation with my oldest grandchild 11 years ago when she was 8 years old. I asked her what she thought it meant that the Torah says that God created human beings in God's image. And I'm stumbling over the pronoun because she then was she, and now 11 years older, feels beyond the binary, so wants us to use they, and says it's even retroactive till then. So I'll use they. So the first thing they said to me was, what's an image? At 8 years old, what's an image? So I said, well, like a photograph. And they said, huh, like a photograph. But God's invisible. How could there be a photograph of God? That doesn't work. Long silence. And I didn't say a word the rest of this conversation. The conversation was totally in their head and the heart, more even than the head, I think. And they said, well, I guess it could be the other way around. maybe God is in the image of human beings. You can take a photograph of human beings. Long silence. But we're all different from each other. It couldn't be just one of us that makes the image. Long silence. We're all different. Wait a minute. Maybe we're all different from each other the way the pieces in my jigsaw puzzle are different from each other. You got to fit us together. And if you fit us together, we make a community. And a community is more like God. Wow. Mm. That was the best Torah I learned in 50 years. And it's more, I never thought of a jigsaw puzzle as an ecological game, but it is. What ecology teaches is that the species are, it's important that they're different from each other because they have to fit together. If they don't fit together, you can't become an ecosystem. And the ecosystem is the one. And the one can't happen unless it's, the pieces are not only different, but different so that they fit. And that was an amazing piece of wisdom from an 8-year-old and from anybody. So I think our religious life is moving in the direction not of top down, not of the great chain of being, which says a rock has very little worth because it has very little consciousness, and plants have a little more, and animals have a good bit more, and human beings have even more. And at the top of it all is the royal God, the King, the Lord, who has all consciousness. And we're just schleppers, servants of the great consciousness. But this says something different. This says that each of us has a consciousness. All of us have a consciousness that we need to fit together and make the one, the unity, out of our sharing, our differences. And I think we're moving there. We've learned to move there partly because we're struggling with what it means to live on an earth of different species, that if we don't act that way, we're going to do ourselves in and everybody else with us.
A focus on universal connectedness can be very heartwarming to contemplate. But in the present day, what do you say to those of your readers who see true evil spreading among humanity, and the last thing they want to feel is that they themselves are unavoidably a part of that?
Uh-huh. Well, I think we're at a choice point. We can either, we, the whole human race, can either look toward the way in which we do fit together, or some of us can decide they want to be in charge. But getting to be in charge takes more and more and more and more force and violence, and so much so that it means death and increasing amounts of death for every species, including our own. I think there are ways beyond it. I've been working recently on, okay, what does it mean? American society is divided almost in half from people who are newly struggling to be accepted as part of the full American democracy, and other people who have long been considered part of the American democracy, and many of whom are shuddering at feeling forgotten as we move to broaden who is supposed to be included. So there are the newcomers, mostly, many of them at least, are not new to the society. They're just new to being included in who's supposed to be paid attention to. And there are the people who feel they're newly forgotten. They used to be paid attention to, but they're not anymore. So I, for instance, thought about the following as policy. I mean, there are two levels to this. First, I think there needs to be more direct dialogue. And there have begun to be organizations that are creating literal face-to-face dialogue between blue America and red America, to use the labels that have somehow gotten attached. But that's not all. There needs to be policy that talks with and for most groups, for the people. And one of the things I've thought about is this. I've talked about the notion of a federal policy to support neighborhood, and I mean neighborhood, solar co-ops that will fund the solarization of groups in neighborhoods to be able to cross the barrier from burning fossil fuels to solar energy. Why? Well, A, at the most immediate, it saves money. If you can make the initial investment, and that's what I'm imagining the federal government doing, it means that you're practically free electricity. That, and by the way, the federal government in the 30s did that with the rural electrification programs when farmers didn't have electricity and they were left out of an incredible advance in technology. And the federal government said, we don't want farmers left out of that. And they did it through co-ops. They said, you form co-ops and we will fund your electrifying. And it worked. And hardly anybody remembers it. It worked so well. It just seems normal and natural now. So what we need is that every neighborhood be able to access renewable energy through solar co-ops. Co-ops, not just individuals, because co-ops can gather together, can make themselves effective units to push for this happening in other neighborhoods and bring in people in the neighborhood who might have been reluctant. And rural neighborhoods, small town neighborhoods, suburban neighborhoods, urban neighborhoods who aren't ready to do this on their own, aren't able to perhaps make the initial investment. The point is to dissolve this blue versus red, where half the country thinks maybe the whole climate question is a hoax, and in any case, I'm not interested in doing it, and make it possible for the local group to meet its own needs, both financially and humanly, meet job needs, so that neighborhoods that have become hollowed out and are suffering, the death rate goes up as people, what people call drug overdoses, but are deliberate suicides by using various drugs. And other neighborhoods in big cities where the jobs are terrible, there may be jobs, but they're terrible, and dead-end jobs, are also able to move ahead in the world. And meanwhile, the earth itself is able to breathe. So evil emerges when the society acts as if we are enemies. And some people, in order to protect their hyper wealth, want half, two halves of the society to continue to treat each other as enemies. So the people who want enmity and rage and fear, those do have to be politically defeated. But huge hunks of the society can become allies, both culturally and economically and politically, if we start seeing that the alliance is not only on behalf of the earth, it's on behalf of each other. So that's at least my own understanding of what the religious transformation would be in our generation.
And I can't let you go without taking a minute or so to talk about the work of the Shalom Center, which you founded in 1983 and still lead today. What should our listeners know about that?
Well, first of all, they can find our website at theshalomcenter.org. You have to have that T-H-E, theshalomcenter.org. And it's very rich in materials for celebration, for prayer, for mostly but not only Jewish celebration. It's got a lot of material for Christian and some for Muslim as well. Not much for other traditions, though a little bit. That's the first thing. The second thing is we've worked especially on the earth connection, the relationship between Adam, the human being, and Adama, the earth. The only way to do that in English is earth and earthling. And I try to use that because the two words in Hebrew really show the interwovenness of earth and earthling, that it's real. The words imitate the reality. Environment means really it's out there. It's somewhere separate in the environment. But Adam, Adama means it's deeply interwoven. So we learn from that, and we are working on that as well.
Rabbi Arthur Wasko is a peace activist, a political advocate, and a prolific author whose latest book is titled Dancing in God's Earthquake, The Coming Transformation of Religion. He continues to lead the Shalom Center, which he founded in 1983. Arthur, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Alton. Thank you, and thank all your listeners. Shalom once again.